So from the work you guys are doing at Focus Forward, what are some of the, I guess, the biggest challenges that young males face today that, well, I guess us as adults might not be quite aware of?
It's a good question. It is different for everyone, but I guess some of the common themes that we see, certainly a lack of direction, particularly in those years where there's a lot of physical and mental changes as well. Like it's a lot of don't really know what I want to do, or I want to pursue sport, but maybe I'm not good enough at sport to make it to an elite level. School grades, whatever their interests are, it's just figuring out what is best for me. And I think not having themselves set up with good habits in the background, if those things that they're really interested in or want to do fall away and they don't have those really good habits or routines in place, that's where we can often see a real dip in motivation. I don't know if you want to touch on that, Das.
I would say a couple of things that clearly stand out to me and that I see at school and even in our sporting team as well is almost the social media impact that we're having. Now, we work predominantly with males, or only with males at this stage. It can be even bigger potentially with females, but even young males today looking at something on Instagram and saying, "Well, why don't I look like that? Why can't I be like that person?" It might be a professional athlete that spent a decade potentially building their body or something like that. And it's like, well, why can't I have that? So that has a big impact and a big challenge, and can cause people to sort of withdraw a little bit. The other one I would say is probably wanting. I've sort of realized this over the last sort of 10 years or 10 to 14 years in my journey, even at a football club, is people are wanting things straight away now. They want things to happen overnight, and so that's just not the reality. Is that's not how it works. Whether you're building a business, you want to build a body, you want to improve anything. Unfortunately, you can't just change it completely overnight. You can change your mindset and that sort of stuff, but the actual practical side of it is a really key component. And building those routines and by design, the way that we work at Focus Forward is taking a really long-term approach and having really, really small tasks and challenges and habits and things that people can get that sense of achievement and tick off. But those would be the two to add on to Hugh's ideas as well. People wanting things immediately, which isn't the reality, and then also the big impact of social media.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I think we're in a society, not only young people, but adults as well, like that instant gratification. Like we
100%.
want things straight away. But I'm 100% with you on that. I think it's that those small, daily, seemingly insignificant things at the time that compound over time that will get to where you want to go. But it's just that consistency of taking action. So with Focus Forward, for a start, how did it actually come about? I know that you guys, like Hugh, you're what, 22 or 23? Darcy, you're 29?
I'm 31. I
31? Gee,
Hugh
that's
and I look about the same age. We tell a lot of people, so we both look about 23, but I'm
yeah.
31, turning 32 this year.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So for me, I started teaching about 8 years ago. So I obviously went to uni 4 years there, then 8 years teaching at Henley High School. Absolutely love it there. And by design, I was teaching in a relief capacity. Really lucky with my job. I was sort of booked in a term at a time. But the problem I found for me was that okay, you get all this work, and then it's like school holidays. You get a fair bit of a break as a teacher, which is good. And I'm like, how can I fill in my time? What am I passionate about? So I started probably 7 years ago doing some support work on the side. So playing football at Glenelg, been there the last 14 years and mixed that sort of stuff in. And then it got to a point for me where I was like, well, I want to sort of impact and help as many people as I can. And I was working with people after school, after training, rinse and repeat the next day. And I sort of came up with a bit of an idea of moving a little bit of it online to sort of have a bit more of an impact for more people. And I've probably been doing that for 4 to 5 years. To be honest, it was a really, really slow burn. And we were talking about this before. The irony of getting Hugh on board and starting Focus Forward was that looking back at it, I was probably a bit lazy with setting up the business. Had this great idea, which a lot of people do, but I had to take action. And if I wanted the business to progress and make it what I thought it could be, and I still think it can be, I had to probably maybe get someone else on board. And the irony of it is that's what we sort of do for people. We're a bit of an accountability partner in that respect. Now, we've been working on Focus Forward probably the last 16 months.
It's about 16 months. I actually remember the conversation. It was probably over coffee one day, and Das said, "I've got this idea, and from my experience, which I'm sure I'll draw on when we do a bit more about our backgrounds, was like, well, we've got this great mix of experience, and I need someone to guide me along and almost keep me accountable with this idea." And I said, "Let's do it. Like, let's do it." And since then, it was almost like that daily check-in model that we do. What have we got on today? How can we get just a little bit better each day? And we would have texted slash had a meeting every single day, probably for the last 400 to 500 days about that. And it's not anything groundbreaking, but what we found was those little small little improvements every day make such a massive difference long term. And that's exactly what we're trying to instill in these boys, is that it's not going to happen overnight. And same with parents. Sometimes they want a quick fix, but that's not sustainable. That's not long term. And I guess that's how we sort of approach focus forward as well, which it's been really nice to see the progression.
So how does actually focus forward work? I know that your focus is 12 plus, like 12 to, so I think you're 12, 25 maybe around that age.
Can be
So how does
sort
it
of.
actually work when like a young person comes on? Is it in a group setting? Is it individual? Tell us a bit more about how it works.
So at the moment, we're working with young males from 12 to 32, actually, so around my age. So,
Good start with my numbers.
so some of our websites, so we've opened it up to a lot more people. We've had some all different types of people reach out, whether it's sporting, school stuff. We work sort of heavily in the NDIS space as well. So the typical day, the way that we break it down for people is, in the morning you wake up, we'll send out a daily check-in every single day in the morning. There might be really, really basic tasks all tailored to the individual. It could be something as simple as focusing on building a morning routine. So have you done your morning routine? So I might have a glass of water. You need to go for a 10-minute walk. Take a photo of you outside, take a photo of the glass of water. Let's get some proof that you're actually doing it. We feel like we've got a pretty good base now over the last sort of year and a half on whether the people we work with are completing the task or not. If they didn't, we want them to be really open and transparent about why they didn't complete the task. So that's what it looks like in the morning. Then that typically opens up discussion. We might have some questions for the day or different things that they've got to do. Opens up discussion throughout the day. And then after sort of school hours, roughly, sort of 3 to 4, sometimes a bit longer, we'll then reflect on the day, make sure they've ticked off the challenge. If they haven't, why not? And that comes back to us sort of reinforcing those positive behaviors and routines. So it's a daily check-in service, all done through WhatsApp. And that allows us to communicate with people. I think we're almost in every state nearly at the moment, which is pretty crazy for us to start off. We just started off in Adelaide. We started off, let's do 12 to 25. And now we're past both of those. And we're just sort of, as a business, you know this as well, Ash, is you got to keep thinking on your feet and adapt. And we feel like we've been able to do that. But yeah, it's a daily check-in service. And it's almost like having an accountability partner.
Yeah, brilliant. Love that model. Because I think like we were talking before we hit record, like we don't not know a lot what goes on in people's lives, like until you, as you mentioned earlier, Darcy, about diving a little bit, I guess, deeper down and finding out so many stories about different young people. And have you found that some of these young boys that you are working with maybe don't have that role model in their lives that you're working with?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a big reason why we get parents and carers and, even support coordinators reach out, is they may not just have that person there to lean on. And sometimes it actually is someone outside of the direct family unit. Some of these boys have really stable families, but they're just struggling to connect with, a direct family member. But for a lot of these boys, it's the lack of positive male role models. So it might be, single parents or, people living with siblings or cousins or whoever that might be that can give them the appropriate support day to day. Yes, maybe every couple of weeks they may get some positive interaction or whatever that might be. And it's no fault of anyone in their life. It's just that there's not a dedicated person or a mentor to do that. So what we've found is, as you mentioned earlier in the question, the day to day is where you really find the gold, or really where you break through, in terms of what's their day to day life look like, and what actually are their challenges day to day, and what's stopping them from getting them to where they want to go. So we find we get a really good understanding from just simple texts each day, as opposed to another approach that might be every couple of weeks having a good half an hour discussion. Because they might not be ready that day to have that. They might wake up and not be in the best frame of mind or in the best mood. So that consistent daily check-ins is where we find we get a lot of breakthrough in terms of their situation, how they're feeling. So.
And how does that like work with, I guess, from the accountability point of view from that the young person? Like, are they always consistent with their I guess daily like check-ins and things like that, or have you found it can be challenging sometimes?
So we'd love them to be, and we'd love to be able to claim that it's 100% response rate every day. That'd be the goal. But of course, there's days that they might reply late, sleep in, might not get back to us, and that's all part of it. The beauty of it is that we reset each day and go again, and then the goal for the next week might be, let's say, two out of the five, they get back to us on time and tick off the goals. Well, now we've got some stuff to work on, and look forward to the next week and keep chipping away. And there's good progress to be made in that space as well. But again, the other thing I'd say is the responses, of course, vary as well. We've got guys who could write books, I think, at the moment on well how articulate they are and how eloquent they are with their responses. But then we've got other people who are probably a bit more shorter in their responses. But that's the beauty of it as well. We've got to adapt and figure out the individual we're talking to, and that's why we sort of tailor our programs to each individual.
And how does that, that's an interesting point because tailor your programs, I guess in that those responses. So how do you actually onboard someone? How do you start off if somebody's coming on tomorrow or somebody's inquiring, how does that process work?
Yeah, so to start things off, well, usually it's a parent or someone reach out to us. Rarely do we get the young male themselves actually go, no, this support's right for me. It's almost always referred on to them from a person who cares or who wants to provide some extra support. And then it's always an introduction. So usually myself and Darcy will meet them, and rapport building and trust is absolutely crucial for this program to work. So if we don't have that, it's really, really hard for them to buy into the program. Particularly young males is probably the biggest, struggle to actually win trust and rapport. So we have to work really hard, and we do introductions over Zoom, FaceTime, or even just audio calls, whatever that might be. And we'll sit with them and chat and just ask questions and just get them to open up and tell them a little bit about us and try to relate to them as best we can. And being younger males ourselves, we do find that we are able to get through to a lot of them. But the onboarding process is we aren't starting this until we can build trust and rapport. And we've got a really good idea of what their day-to-day looks like, what are their interests, what are they struggling with, what's some of their goals or recent successes. And then that's how we build the program out, is we can go and pick some of those things apart and say, okay, this is what they're interested in, or they've got time each day for this, or they don't have time for this. Maybe this is the time they wake up each day, et cetera, et cetera. So that's sort of how we build it out. And then we start them usually at the start of a week, and they get rolling from there.
It's probably important as well, just to add to that, building that rapport and that trust with the parent. So typically we'll, for example, last night we had a parent and her son on board, and we were chatting to them exactly as we are now. And then we felt really confident in asking, can we have 5 or 10 minutes just to chat with this young person? And quite often, once you sort of have a chat to them, open up, explain a bit about your background, like we were sort of blown away last night about one of the guys we were speaking to. He's only a 13-year-old, and his mum left, and he was just chatting to us. And it's essentially to him, random people have jumped online and are chatting to him. But we sort of worked really hard in that first 10, 15 minutes, made him feel really comfortable. And that's the goal, I guess, in the end, because we're going to be the ones who are communicating with him. We're not communicating with the mum directly every day. So we need to build that trust and that rapport. So that's also a big part of the onboarding process, is to sort of, make the parents feel really secure and trust us as well.
And how does that work? So once they become part of the fast forward, I guess program, you'd call it, or mentoring, sorry. How does that interaction work with the parents along that journey? Do you have interaction with them, or is it just purely with the young person themselves?
It's a good question. One thing we do pride ourselves on is just being ultra transparent. And the beauty of WhatsApp is that it is all there for us. So what we do every couple of weeks is actually look back on those messages and come up with a couple of sentences or key themes that we've worked on with the young person, and then just feed that back to the parent or carer, whoever it might be. It's absolutely confidential, a lot of our mentoring, but it is really important to know for the parents that their son or whoever it is just making progress, or is receiving this from us. So in terms of the conversations themselves, they're very much, for the privacy of the young person, kept between us, unless there's a safety issue, et cetera, et cetera. But they'll often get a couple every couple of weeks an email or a text or a call from us, just with a quick check-in, and to make sure they're all on board and still happy with our service too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love questions. So what sort of questions do you ask the young people when, I guess you're on like having this like conversation over Zoom or whatever it is, like whatever WhatsApp or what do you actually ask like to get I guess information from them? and
So
make them feel
again,
comfortable.
yeah. So again, depends on the individual. So I was working with someone last week. We sort of onboarded him, and I opened up and asked him a question. So we sort of had some baseline questions at the start. You know, tell me your hobbies and your interests and what do you do. And there's real sort of surface level stuff. And I actually just asked him last night. I asked him this. I said, "Tell me something about yourself. There's a lot that I don't know, but tell me something about yourself that I would have no idea that you're interested in." And he goes, "I've written 3 books." And I was like, "Okay, here we go." And I reckon we had probably a 30-40 minute chat back and forth with each other about the process of it. And you sort of are looking for that piece of gold that you can go with. So typically it's a hobby or it's something that they're interested in that you can sort of use as the vehicle. Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's writing books, could be anything. That's sort of the way we can structure some of the questions. But a lot of them are for us important to get a lot of data from them. It can be sleep scores, mood scores, those types of things in the morning to be really consistent with those. So it's almost really bang, wake up and they know what they're going to get. Then there'll be a few different ones throughout the day. It could be really open-ended questions like that one I just gave. But yeah, just hobbies, interests, that sort of stuff. And then you build that relationship and rapport, get to know them more. And it's more interested about what they're doing, what did you get up to on the weekend, those sorts of things, and you can build on that.
Yeah, I agree. It's important to, I guess, be able to resonate with their interests as best we can. So I can probably speak for me and Das. We've probably learned more about the various activities young people do. Like I've learned about jiu-jitsu, Das books, like aircrafts,
Fortnite.
Fortnite, Minecraft. Like it is our responsibility to be able to talk to these young boys about those things, because if we can't and that's their key interest, then they can't relate. So it's been fun. We learn a lot about what young people do these days and their hobbies and activities, which I guess we love, which is cool.
You make yourself sound like you're about 50 when you're about this.
I know it's it kills me. No. He's part of that generation as well. That's probably a good positive as well to have Hugh. If there's any language I'm not sure of, I'll pass it over to Hugh and he can
That's
tell
right.
me.
100%. And it's what you're saying there is like you're building that connection, helping that young person feel like they belong as well, and showing that interest. And you always got those conversations to come back to. Like when I was teaching, I remember just like walking through like a courtyard, and I just knew most, like at least one thing about one of the students. And like it might be Monday, and you knew they played soccer, and you just asked them how they went, and their face lights up. Like it's amazing what it
Makes a
can do.
massive difference, doesn't it? That small piece of interest. And I think what we probably underestimated throughout this program, the things we do is that aspect there that you just spoke about, is actually showing interest or taking interest in someone's life. Because a lot of the people that we work with, they've got these hobbies and interests, but they've got no one to sort of share it with or bounce ideas off, or, you know, did you win hockey on the weekend? What was the score? Who'd you play? And they're like, so maybe they keep going for about 20 minutes, so you got to get to class after that. But at least it's another talking point. That you, like you said, the exact same thing you said. I find I've sort of implemented that and just taking interest. And you're right. You can see their eyes light up, and then it's a bit of a relationship you've created through that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it like goes for anyone at any level. Like as soon as people ask about you, like you show an interest, like it doesn't matter if you're an adult or a person, like we all feel good about it. So it's a really important thing. And I want to circle back about back to your backgrounds now. Hugh, I actually taught in primary school,
You
so it was two,
did.
about 2012 to 2014. Hugh arrived at Emmanuel. Were you in year four?
Yeah, year 4, Emmanuel Primary
Yep,
School.
year
Yep,
6.
2012. Yeah.
And yep, taught Hugh in PE, and you lived over like the back of the school. And one memory I have of you, Hugh, was you used to come over with Max, your brother, really early and help set up like Saturday morning school sport. Like there was soccer nets, there was football goals put out, football like pads on the goalposts as well. And you and Max were quite often there really early to help out. And that's one, I guess, memory. And it's not surprising you've gone on, I guess, in that area of like being of service to other people as well, and to really, I guess, be caring because you sort of showed those skills back then. And also, I know that you also with Focus Forward, you also do mental health training as well. So that's a little bit about your background, Hubert. Do you want to share a bit more about that and how you, I guess, I haven't mentioned about being a premiership player at Glenelg, which you're both, which is amazing. So yeah, tell us a little bit about, I guess, your background and what led, I guess, I mean, we've heard a little bit about what led to Focus Finance, but I guess a little bit more about that path and then DAS as well.
Definitely. Yeah. So Obviously, it taught me and probably set me up very well in my sporting journey, Ash, which was great. I absolutely love my time with you and at Emmanuel. Yeah, grew up on the back of the school there, came over from Melbourne, and very grateful for my parents to have bought a house with a gate to the back oval of Emmanuel. So sport was a massive thing for me, and growing up with two brothers as well set me up really well. Looking back now, probably going through that period, sport and my brothers and mates and that, I guess, connection was something that really held me in good stead. And I'm sort of in that 50% or whatever it is now with a split family. So that sort of happened during that school period, which looking back now, I probably didn't realize how valuable a lot of those relationships and people outside of particularly the direct family unit were. So I guess that's something I'm able to really relate to and assist with, particularly in my work now. But throughout my school, love sport, and love my brothers and playing sport with them. And then outside of school, I was a little bit lost. I wanted to get drafted, so that didn't happen. So I took a gap year, literally worked a casual job and had no idea what I wanted to do. Darcy met me in that year, and it was fair to say I'm probably a little bit different to how I am now. I was a bit of a rat bag, but I always had this interest through, particularly my mum, around mental health and well-being. She was really early on an advocate in that space in her roles, and again, probably without knowing, developed a real compassion and understanding for that space. And she sort of came to me one day and said, "There's a program called Mental Health First Aid. I don't really have the capacity to do it. Would you be interested in becoming a facilitator? Because I think you'd resonate with these teachers and coaches and people who support young people really well." And I said, "Well, I'm not sure about how I feel talking in front of people, but I'll give it a go. One, because I'm really interested in it, and two, it was also a really cool job opportunity. So got my license for the Youth Mental Health First Aid course, and fast forward 3 to 4 years later, I'm an adult mental health first aid facilitator as well. Sort of throughout that period, because that program is only for adults, I found this itch that I couldn't scratch of working directly with young people. And throughout that period, I also coached at Emmanuel College, where I went to school, in football, so like year eights and nines, which I saw a lot of different, challenges and things in that space. So I had this sort of itch I needed to scratch. And then when Das came to me sort of 18 months ago, I was like, this is what I'm after. Like, as much as I love working with adults, I think kids are way more interesting. And that's with all due respect to the adults in the world. But I just found that being able to talk to a young person and have this influence over them, positive influence, to get them from here to here is really impactful. And I was kind of missing that. So what I've found is that has not only benefited me personally, but also being still a mental health first aid facilitator has made my work so much better, because I just am dealing with these kids and helping them every single day. So that's, I guess, my background to now. I'm still a facilitator for Mental Health First Aid, which is a program which I love, and it's very well respected, but certainly in the future, looking to do a lot more of this, which is what I love. So that's a bit about me, Das. I went on for a little bit. Do you want to go
No, that's all
now?
right. Well, firstly,
No,
two things.
good.
I'm impressed by the fact that most people who live next door to a school are always the kids who are late at school. So kudos to you to be able to do that. The second thing is I've been so impressed with the way that Hugh's tackled Focus Forward, and to be his age and present in front of people and speak the way he does at his age. I look back, I wouldn't have been able to do that at his age. So
Oh, absolutely.
he's really
No,
impressive with
same.
that. A little bit about me, I guess my sort of summary of it is my journey's probably been shaped probably by two different things, and that's probably education and then semi-professional sport. We can say that, can't we? It's a highest level of sport.
Absolutely.
Been involved at the footy club Glenelg for the last 14 years. So started when I was 18 there, now 31. Absolutely love it there. Obviously, where I met Hugh, met a lot of amazing people there. And then also have been teaching in education space for 8 years at Henley, and then 4 years of uni before that as well. Had a semi-interesting upbringing. I moved around a lot. My dad played football for Essendon, and then he also coached at Essendon. Got sacked by Kevin Sheedy, and then he brought him back as a coach. Then he went to Port Adelaide, was head coach at Melbourne Footy Club, and then came back to the Crows. So essentially, my journey was, where are we going next? A different school, maybe five or six different schools. We're packing up and leaving, going to the next place. But there's so many positives. I wouldn't change it at all to be able to learn lots of different skills throughout that. So being able to talk to people, communicate with people, have to make new friends each time. And ironically, sport was probably the vehicle for me that helped all that. But just so lucky for, yeah, in for the upbringing that I did have. As we mentioned before, unfortunately, my dad passed away when I was 19, and he was obviously a big role model for me. You always look up to your parents, I think, typically, and I was no different in that regard. So yeah, he was a bit of a hero for me. My mum's absolutely amazing, the most unselfish person that I know. I mentioned the places we moved around. She raised me and my brother, who's 2 years older than me, with essentially no help traveling around Australia and those sorts of things, which is, I can imagine, a huge challenge. But yeah, that's essentially where I'm at now, and I found a real passion, I guess, working at school. The people that I really enjoy working with, or I've found that I've built really good relationships with, are the kids that potentially are struggling a little bit, maybe sporty, struggling a little bit at school, don't have that role model in their life. And now that I'm a little bit older, I feel like I've got that lived experience of having a really strong male mentor in my life, and then also not having it. And I can sort of detect behaviors and patterns that happen when you don't have someone in your corner, as opposed to having someone there. So it's a bit about my background, and then also add in some of the reasons why I'm so passionate, I think, about what we're doing.
No, thanks for sharing that. And that's yeah, I guess it's really a challenging situation losing a dad at 19. That's like, yeah, obviously, I mean, 19's young, very young still, and it's what were some of those challenges that came up during that time? Can you recall some of those challenges that really felt like that you?
Definitely challenges there. I think at that stage, when I reflect on it, I was still like, I was 19, but I felt like I was really mature for my age because of the experiences I had before, moving around a lot. But probably looking at it, I was a bit, even just the situation itself. So dad got diagnosed with lung cancer, and then 4.5 months later, he passed away. So it was a really aggressive form of cancer that he got diagnosed with. And during that period, I was probably a bit naive to what was happening. I think a typical young male, which is sort of opposite of what we encourage our people to do, but you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to ask anyone for help, you don't want to think the worst, and so you just continue on living your life as if sort of nothing's happening, when really there's a really significant thing that's happening. So that at that stage, just being probably a little bit naive to the whole situation was a challenge in itself. And then I think as the years go on and you get a bit older, the sad part of it is you just go, well, I wish I could ask him this, or I could share or ask this piece of information now about this, and have someone there in your corner that you can just go to. And then I guess through the football club as well, what is it at the footy club? You probably, most of the players are 15 to 31. I'm the oldest one. And you've got coaches there. So that demographic of people there, you couldn't have a better support network for young males to be around each other, to have coaches there, people to look up to and ask questions. So that's been why I think I've played, or a big part of the reason why I've been at the footy club for so long, because I value that so highly and I need that. But then the challenges are, again, to go back to dad, it's like, you just want to be able to go to the pub and have a beer with him, or go and do something and ask him this question, but you just can't. So lots of different challenges, but again, you form a way to move on from it. Not move on, but find different ways to sort of continue on with your life, because you have to, don't you? You can't just sort of sit around, and got to be proactive and move forward. And really enjoying what we're doing in this sort of space.
Yeah, appreciate that and appreciate you sharing that. And just on sport, I reckon it's huge. I mean, like here you mentioned before, my goal was to play AFL football when I was younger as well. I played at South Adelaide. Didn't play as many league games as you guys, but actually might have you covered just you, but you'll get there
Just,
eventually.
maybe just, yes.
And I totally get it, but I learned so much from sport. Like, I guess a lot of I feel like I'm pretty driven, and I reckon that, and also realize that you've got to put in the work, and I reckon that came from sport. Understanding that I'm responsible to like put in the effort to get fitter, to work on my skills. Like, yes, you've got coaches who can support you, but you've got to put in the effort. And I've learned that, and that's carried me through. Like to that today, I still apply that philosophy in my own life, and that definitely come through sport. So, what's your thoughts about? I mean, I know not everyone's sporty, but I guess it doesn't have to be necessarily sport, but being a part of something like whether that's a chess club or a sporting club, some kind of community thing that might be more down in a person's path. But yeah, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's just such a massive protective factor for all of the risks that come with being a young person. Like being in a sporting club, it or any club, like it could be a book club, as you said, a chess club, it could be whatever, a walking group, anything where you get positive social interaction and also stimulates your mind slash body. Like you're killing so many birds with one stone by participating in something that is really bigger than yourself. It's not, or how am I going, or what can I do? It's okay, yes, I need to get myself to a certain point to be able to contribute, but that's because we want to get to somewhere like a win or a premiership in our case. It really teaches you those values around teamwork, and it also gives you a place. For me, it's a place where I can disconnect from everything else. As much as, we love the work we do, being able to go somewhere where you're working towards a common goal with your mates, with people you love, that also gives you those positive endorphins of exercise. It's for us a no-brainer, I think, for me personally. So it's something we definitely advocate for. Obviously, if young people aren't able to play team sport, then it's how can we get you interacting positively socially with an activity that you like, whatever that might be. And for some young people, it is something like video games, which is fine. It's where they connect, but it's okay. Video games, how can we get a bit of a healthy balance with other good habits, getting you outside, getting you doing some exercise without taking away from maybe their little social network that they have online? Because that's a big thing we see as well. I don't know if you wanted to add anything around
No,
that,
I'll
Tom.
just say you're spot on. Just the even with a team or whatever you're doing involved in that environment, it's the accountability aspect again as well. Some people are relying on you to show up and do the right thing. The other big thing I would say is the sporting world, I think, teaches you really good discipline. So the big one I notice that I see coming through, and I try and talk to my people about, is being really punctual. So if I say to meet, we're gonna meet at 7 o'clock, and Hugh had to find this out the hard way when we first
It's a
did a
good story. You
session.
should tell the story.
Well, do you want to tell it?
Yeah, we'll tell the story. So Darth talks about being punctual. As I said, when I was 17, 18, I wasn't there yet in terms of the standards that they wanted to set. And so grateful again for the football club because they taught me all of these things. But Darcy, being an older player, said to me, "Come to the football club on Saturday and we'll do a cross training session, help get you a little bit fitter." And he said, "Be there at 7." And he says, "Don't be late." And I said, "Done, I'll be there." And then I get there at about 7:04, and there's a gym full of older players whom I'd only been really training with for a month or two. And a little bit cruel, but he instructed them not to talk to me. So I've walked into a silent gym, no music. And for the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm wondering why no one would talk to me. And Darth said, "Don't be late next time."
In those words,
And I don't think I was ever late after that,
yeah.
which was a little bit harsh, but he knew my boundaries. And I
Yeah.
think it's little things like that that set you up really well. And as Darth said, you probably drive it as much as anyone in terms of being punctual, because it's such a good value to have.
It's interesting. I mean, it goes a lot. I think that's a massive thing as well. Like, it's some of those little things that it doesn't matter. No, not sure the right wording, but we can be punctual. Like, there's no real excuse for it. Like, being on time, just developing those habits, that it's like the keystone habit. Like, if you get one like habit mastered, then it leads into those other ones as well. And I think that's one thing that we can all do. Like, and especially when you get older, like being in the workforce, like you've got to be on time. Like, Darth, as a teacher, you can't be late.
No,
Like,
there's
you've
a
got so
classroom full of
many
people waiting for you, isn't there? It's
people.
like you really can't be late. Can't be late, so.
I think it's just, like, it's part of that discipline, without a doubt. And just then you mentioned a few, like, about, I guess, some habits, some physical habits, but I guess healthy habits as well. Like, I know for me, I reckon physical activity, I love working out, going to the gym, doing like intense physical activity, but purely for mental reasons, because I know that afterwards when I do it in the morning, I feel great. I'm set for the rest of the day. If I do have a bit of a bad day, go for a walk or go to the gym, and I know that I'm self-aware that's going to help me. So, what are some of those, I guess, habits for that we can share with parents or educators or coaches or young people themselves? What are some of those habits that help build confidence, that resilience, that you guys, I guess, part on your the people that you work, young people you work with?
Yeah, so we talked about this before. What are some, I guess, takeaways for parents, teachers, etc.? One of the big ones we instill is we've said it, but it's a morning routine, and that can look so different for everyone. But set up something really easy and attainable each morning that you can do. It could be as simple as just picking your clothes up off the floor and having 2 glasses of water before you walk out the door each morning. Because then, one, you know you're going to be hydrated in the morning, which, you know, obviously helps your brain, helps your body. Two, you want to come home after what might be a stressful day to a clean room, which will then make you feel better. So there's all these hidden, I guess, reasons as to why we get these boys to do these things, but they can be so simple. So I think morning routine is one, and just working out what works best for that young person. Does mum or dad have to get them out of bed versus how can we set an alarm or get them out of bed 15 to 20 minutes earlier so that they can do the things they need to do to set themselves up well for the day. The other thing we do a lot is out of 10 check-ins. So we'll do things like ask them how they're feeling out of 10 with their energy and how they sleep out of 10. And what that does, it gives us a real good gauge of how they feel and how they, you know, sleep and how their energy is day to day. But also, without them really knowing, it's actually a bit of self-awareness training. So it's actually getting them to go, okay, a 1 to 10 scale is quite a simple one for young people. And if not, you can use, you know, faces with sad faces, happy faces, whatever it is. But it actually builds self-awareness with these young people to go, okay, before I start the day or before I go to bed, how am I actually feeling? And it just helps them go, okay, maybe I'm a 6 today and I was a 5 yesterday. That's positive. Or, you know, are there reasons why I'm feeling a bit better today or worse? Or what's one thing I can do to boost my score today? So that's just a little thing. Like even that little scale is something so simple that we use. Das, do you want to touch on a
The only
couple?
other thing I'd say is that I think is really important, could be coming from a teaching background, but and this goes for parents and the people we work with directly, is if you can give them really good education on why they're doing things. So you mentioned before, Ash, well, you do it, you know the reason why you go and work out or go for a walk, because it's going to help all these different things. So if we can give them the background and a little bit of information on, well, if you do this, this is the result that's going to happen. So it's that stuff. Another big one that we're not dietitians, but we feel like we've got a good understanding, gauge on certain foods and things that can help your brain, can help you at different times of the day specifically. So it might be football training. We can figure out things that work for us and give that advice. Again, certainly don't claim we're dietitians, but I find that's a massive one that I would love to somehow incorporate even more if we could, the education around diet and certain things you're eating. You can imagine some of the diets, and you would have seen these before at school, Ash, as well, that kids are having. It's like you just feel like they're set up to almost fail in the end. Like they're just going to burn out, their energy is going to go straight up and back down. So that stuff as well, and the education behind it, I think is just as important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, you nailed on that. Like, diet and physical activity is huge, I reckon. Really, such important things. And with like those sort of morning routines, okay, this is what you're going to do, or do you put it to the young person and I guess frame questions around, or what's something you can do in the morning? How do you actually go about setting those morning tasks?
So again, it'll be different for each individual, but what we found that works, again, when you're just first starting is, and sometimes when people don't complete the challenges, what we'll do is strip it right back to make sure that they are really, really attainable, easy goals. So like we said before, it might be you have got to have a glass of water in the morning. Okay, we'll do that for a week, report on that. How'd you go? I didn't do it this day, why not? If they complete it, it's like, okay, let's add in this little bit here. And so you just slowly over time, long-term approach, building in tiny little things. And the goal that I talk to my guys about is if you're traveling to Melbourne interstate, you're in a different place or doing something in a new place, I want you still to be able to do that little morning routine. There has to be a way that you can do that. So it's not just when you're at home you do it. It's you've built up those routines and habits and you go, I know that I'm doing this in the morning. It might take me 5 minutes, but I know wherever I am in the world almost, I can just quickly do this and it's going to get me going and prepare me for the day. So again, it comes back to really stripping it down. Some people, it might be a 25-minute routine that they like doing all this stuff. They listen to a podcast, they listen to music, go for a walk. Other people, it might be have a glass of water and stretch for 2 minutes and see if you can do that. Clean your room, put one pillow up on your bed. If you can't make your whole bed, do start with one pillow and see how you go over the week, which I'm working on with Hugh.
Yeah, that's right.
Not true. But yes,
No.
it's
Ridiculous.
I think It's just about knowing what works for them. So like the glass of water, for example, we might ask, what's your hydration like throughout the day? And we've had some boys go, I don't drink much water at all. So even for them, that might be a stretch. So it can be, have half a glass of water and clean your teeth each morning or something like that. And hygiene's something we focus on too.
Hygiene's a big
So
one, yeah.
it's dependent on the young person, but as long as they're doing just something each day, it's the routine. And that's why we really value what we do, because even them getting the message and responding to us, whether they do the challenges or not, is a positive habit. So those little interactions, they really, really make a difference.
Yeah. Now, without putting you on the spot, what's some of those, I guess, those really good stories that you've had so far? Has there been some like good, I don't know, not sure if it's feedback or good stories that you've know that you've had a positive impact?
So I've got someone that I've been working with, a couple off the top of my head, someone I've been working with. We're trying to figure out before. I reckon he would honestly be close to, I'm going to say, minimum 350 days of responding every single morning and ticking off every single challenge we've given him. So he's in that mind frame now. It's like we were talking before about he's one of those guys that, like, if we didn't message him, I think he'd be like, where's the message? Where are the challenges? I need to do this sort of stuff. We've had people that have increased their. Hugh was dealing with someone who's like increased his school retention rate. He went for 5 days for the first time in like 3 years, I think.
Yeah, a couple of years.
We've had people help them write resumes and give them out. We had a guy working in like a flooring for a flooring company as his first job, helping write a resume and communicate with the people. So we've got people involved at the Glenelg Footy Club as well. So we've got someone who's a water boy there now as well, who's there before us. He's there an hour and a half before us, there an hour after, like loves the club. And that's a huge social thing for him. We've got a couple of people involved in the footy club as well, actually, and their parents absolutely love it. It's another hobby and place where they're, socially connected and interacting with other people. So it's the beauty of it. And I think the thing we love most about it is that there's so many different, as we said, it's tailored for each individual, but there's so many different things that people have sort of achieved from it. We've had people lose weight from little diet tips and little tiny little things we've implemented, improve their step count. We set him a goal, I think, of like 4,500 steps just to try and wind up and improve his steps. And he's like, I don't think I can do more than 900 or a 900 or 1,000 for the day. Send him through at the end of the day, it's like 5,400. So it's like
Smashed it.
people aren't really even aware potentially of what they're doing as well. But we've had all kinds of things, but that's just a few examples off the
Yeah,
top.
absolutely. No, they're really good. They're brilliant. And I love what you guys are doing. And yeah, really appreciate you sharing those insights about how, I guess, Focus Forward came about, but also, I guess, the purpose of what you're doing and also some of the issues that young people were facing. Really, really good insights. And where can people find you and find a bit more about Focus Forward and how to be, how they could, or if they got a young person in mind, how can they be part of it?
Definitely. So our website is www.focusforwardmentoring.com. We're on socials, Facebook, Instagram. Myself and Darcy are always open for coffees, for chats, for Zoom meetings. So all of our contact details are on our website and our socials too. As we said before, the onboarding process is just reach out for a chat, connect us with a young person. Similarly, if you're at a school or you're a support coordinator, we talk to a lot of schools and support coordinators, and it's a space we're looking to bridge into. Grab us for a coffee. I'm sure you'll be able to get our contacts through the podcast, through Ash as well. So yeah, happy to chat to whoever, wherever, whenever.
Absolutely. We'll put those links in the show notes for sure.
Done.
All right, boys. We'll really appreciate the time and the insights, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ash.
Thanks, Ash. Really appreciate it.